This is CNT Talk. Every week, two friends debate the issues of the ages as we agree to disagree. It's never politically correct, but it's always entertaining. Join us tonight so you can sound knowledgeable at work tomorrow. We're smacking you upside the head with the hammer of truth. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello. Welcome back to our show. I had some protesters out earlier this week telling me that we need to get another show out. So here we are giving another show.
I know. Unfortunately, we had some scheduling issues. I told Chad before we just started here, I think he and I are both suffering from apocalyptic hay fever.
Yes. So high pollen count.
Yes. If I cut off for 10 seconds, that probably means I'm sneezing and trying to avoid spitting into the microphone.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Luckily, you're the only one that spits into that microphone, so it's just your germs back to you. So let's get started. Nothing's happened in the 2 weeks since we last talked.
It's good, so it doesn't really matter that we missed.
Whatever we talk about is the most important thing to learn about tonight. So there's a topic that's a little difficult to understand, and it's about the Mueller investigation. So I'm going to play this clip from Mark Levin, a very well-known talk show host. I want you to listen closely because he's going to go through a lot of things, but listen to what
he's... How long is the clip?
It's about 4 minutes.
Okay.
But I think most of it needs to be said so you understand the clip. And then, Tony, we've got our own
resident... I have limited patience with clips.
We can stop it at any time. Tony's going to be a constitutional expert on this.
Oh, yeah, so. I don't know about that.
So here we go.
First of all, this seed was planted with me by a hat tip to Professor Stephen Calabrese, an old friend of mine who worked for Attorney General Meese as well. We have in the Constitution something called the Appointments Clause, and it applies to principal officers of the executive branch. There's inferior officers, you know, like a chief of staff, an administrative assistant who reports to a principal. Then there's principal officers. As an example, every single United States attorney in the United States has to be nominated by the President of the United States and confirmed by the Senate, because our founders made clear that they wanted both branches of government involved in appointments of these senior-level people. You have assistant secretaries in departments, deputy secretaries in departments, and, of course, cabinet secretaries, and I said U.S. attorneys. Here's the problem. The appointment of Mueller is utterly unconstitutional for a number of reasons. Rod Rosenstein gave him an agenda that is so broad, not a specific individual, not a specific statute, not even a specific matter. And not only was the initial appointment incredibly broad, he keeps expanding it. So this special counsel is different than past special counsels. He's more like a roving U.S. attorney. Also, we learned something today that's absolutely incredible. In Politico, it says several court filings indicate that when lawyers for Mueller's office appeared in federal court in Alexandria earlier this year, they did so not only as representatives of Mueller's office, but they received an appointment, a special assistant United States attorney appointment in the Eastern District of Virginia. They are, in effect, assistant United States attorneys. Robert Mueller wanted to expand their power. They report to him. If they're assistant United States attorneys or special assistants United States attorneys, that makes Mueller, without question, the equivalent of a United States attorney. So what's unique about him and past independent counsel and special counsel is the massive breadth of his investigation. He's going into bank fraud, wire fraud. He's going into Russia. He's going into a number of other countries. He's interviewed hundreds of individuals, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of documents. He's not an inferior employee like an administrative assistant or anything of that sort. He is a principal officer. And under the Appointments Clause of the United States Constitution, Article 2, Mr. Rosenstein usurped the authority of the President of the United States to nominate whomever he wants as a prosecutor, and Mr. Rosenstein usurped the power of the United States Senate, which has the control over confirmation or not. Mr. Mueller is serving unconstitutionally in violation of the Appointments Clause of the Constitution because of the way Rosenstein appointed him, because of expanding his authority, because Mr. Mueller has expanded his own authority with these four now assistant United States attorneys. And every defendant in this case, every witness in this case, everybody who receives a subpoena in this case, whatever federal court it is, should raise the issue of the Appointments Clause of the Constitution and that Mr. Mueller is conducting himself and his appointment is unconstitutional. See, here's the deal. These career bureaucrat prosecutors like Rosenstein and Mueller and Comey, they don't understand the Constitution. They understand parts of it like due process, warrants, subpoenas, probable cause. Never read the Appointments Clause. Well. They've never read the Supreme Court decisions involved in that, like Morrison versus Olson and so forth. I have. Professor Calabrese has. I want your audience to know this, too. So, Mr. Mueller, unlike any past special counsel, unlike any past independent counsel, the breadth of his investigation is so massive, it's so broad. By the initial appointment, the subsequent expansion, and now four of his own people getting dual appointments as effectively assistant United States attorneys, Mr. Mueller, his conduct, his appointment is unconstitutional.
Okay, so that was a long clip. Was that okay?
Yeah, that was okay.
So I want to point something out. You pointed this out before. The investigation is very broad. It's not real specific as special counsels are supposed to be.
Let's just be clear. It's not just that it's very broad. It is essentially limitless. There are no limits whatsoever.
Correct, and I think Mark Levin talked to that. I don't know if we talked about this before, but the reason he made those four assistants effectively assistant U.S. attorneys is because he felt if he got fired, they would still be able to take up the mantle and still have the authority to move forward. So he's effectively made it even more unconstitutional. Do you believe what you're hearing? Is it a valid argument?
Oh, I think it's absolutely a valid argument. I think, I've actually read some of Calabresi's filing, and certainly I agree with all that analysis under the appointments clause. But we've actually, and other people have been making this point from the beginning, whether you evaluate it from a constitutional analysis, which in my view it is invalid, I don't even think you need to get there. And obviously the Constitution is about as good as it gets in terms of you can't violate that. But I've made this point repeatedly, that even under the regulation, okay, there is a specific regulation which governs the appointment of a special counsel and the things that must be done. Rosenstein's appointment violates the regulation. One of the things that the regulation requires is specificity in terms of what suspected crimes are being investigated. So there's two points there. There's no specificity at all in terms of what Mueller's overall jurisdiction is. That's the first thing. He essentially is acting under a general warrant, which doesn't exist. That's impermissible. That is unconstitutional in our system of justice. Number two,
explain to people, that's unconstitutional at any level.
Yes.
Not just a special prosecutor level. You can't just
because
have a general warrant.
And,
be specific.
You may be saying, well, what's the problem? Because I hear all the argument is sort of, well, do you expect a prosecutor, you know, when he's going after, let's say, a drug dealer and he discovers some other crime, they're allowed to pursue that. Yes, but that begs the question. The prosecutor at least has to start with probable cause that an original crime has been committed. Mm-hmm. And then in the course of that investigation, if there are other crimes which the evidence has demonstrated might exist, you can go back to a judge and say, in the course of our investigation of this particular crime, which was spelled out, we have reason to believe other crimes were committed, and they can expand. The problem here is they never started with any specific crime. And I emphasize crime. We've talked about this ad nauseum. This is not a criminal investigation. You have a prosecutor who uses grand juries, who is used to conducting prosecutions in the criminal system, who is conducting a counterintelligence investigation. That also is a fundamental defect that should preclude Mueller from continuing this investigation. It has no defined limits, and it's not a criminal investigation. We run counterintelligence investigations all the time, but they don't lead to people, American citizens, being placed in jail unless there are subsidiary crimes that are then attached to that counterintelligence investigation. So absolutely, I agree with this, but we've been making this point, and others have, since the beginning.
So let me ask you this. Michael Flynn pled guilty to lying to the FBI. Papadopoulos has been charged with any man of things. Manafort's been charged with four indictments. Obviously, there's a crime there, right, Tony? Because there's been charges and pled guilty, and obviously,
right. And this gets exactly. And of course, you teed that up nicely. I mean, this gets back to the main point, which is the crimes for which Manafort and Page and Flynn have been indicted. We call them process crimes. Okay, let me strike that. Flynn's is a process crime because Flynn was charged with perjuring himself when he spoke to FBI investigators. The underlying conduct for which he was being investigated was perfectly legal. So there isn't even some underlying crime. What they're saying is, oh, when you testified, when you talked to us in an interview, it was untruthful. The other crimes that Manafort and Page committed have nothing to do with the original reason that this investigation supposedly exists.
Which has been referred to other courts, not Mueller's purview.
So this is a perfect example of, we're going to send out a prosecutor in search of crimes. We're not going to tell you what he's actually investigating. He'll let you know when he finds it. And I would encourage anyone, if you can get a hold of it, because I'm a lawyer, so I enjoy this stuff. But if you can get a hold of the transcript of the hearing before Judge Ellis. Okay, Judge Ellis is the one that reamed out, and this was with Manafort's lawyers, who are contending that what he has been charged with is should be thrown out because it exceeds any original scope of Mueller's authority. And what was amazing about this transcript, first because Ellis just browbeat the lawyer and made it clear to them, listen, I'm not accepting your argument that you have unfettered authority in this country. The Constitution doesn't permit this. But what the government's lawyers basically said to Ellis was, we have unfettered authority and we don't have to tell you what it is. Because Ellis said, I want to see the document under which you are claiming the ability to go after a guy. Remember, this was for conduct involving him as a foreign agent, tax evasion that occurred almost, I think, a decade.
Which may be true.
Absolutely.
But has nothing to do with
and
this.
And that was the judge's point. The judge kept saying to them, explain to me why you, as a special prosecutor who has been appointed to investigate I'm not sure what, has the ability to engage in this criminal prosecution. Why can't this be handled by a federal prosecutor? The whole point is that a special prosecutor, a special counsel, has limited jurisdiction. He is a special creature. Mm-hmm. And you can't just go running around deciding, now I'm going to look into whether Donald Trump engaged in domestic abuse when he was 24 years old. Or that's what's going on. And so the audacity of these guys is to tell the judge, we don't have to tell you what our full scope of authority is because that's classified.
Could Ellis throw this out completely?
Absolutely.
He said, I don't like that.
Well, he did. Ellis basically said, I'm going to be the judge. Basically, they said, you need to trust us. We're allowed to do this. And by the way, we don't have to show you what allows us to do this. And Ellis basically said, I'm going to be the judge of that. And you better turn this over to me in a redacted fashion or unredacted fashion. If you're claiming some special extra authority that Rosenstein has granted you to pursue these kinds of issues. So you're right. This has been at the heart of this from the beginning. And here's a more fundamental question, Chad, which Levin didn't talk about. What is the reason? Okay, why was the investigation started? In other words, what is the catalyst? What happened that allowed and justified Rosenstein to say, we need a special counsel? What is that?
Comey getting fired, I believe.
I think you're correct.
I think that's the only reason.
The next question is, how is it possible that Comey getting fired is a legitimate basis to appoint a special counsel?
It isn't.
Because Donald Trump can fire James Comey Monday through Sunday, 24/7, because he doesn't like his hair, because he thinks that he's a slovenly dresser.
It's too tall.
Because he's a sanctimonious twit, as I like to call it. Whatever reason, Trump has full authority to do that at any time. How does that trigger a special counsel investigation?
It shouldn't.
No, that's the point.
And so go back to the constitutionality first. Rosenstein appoints it without any justification because Comey getting fired should not trigger a special counsel any way, shape, or form. Although Comey saying, I was investigating all this and now I'm fired, so there has to be something else. Well, Andrew McCabe stepped in and he screwed that up as well.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And let's make a key distinction here. Trump is clearly under the law and under the Constitution, given his executive authority, and Comey is within the executive branch. Trump, at any point in time, can say, you're gone.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
And Andrew McCabe.
Now,
and
but to be
Robert
clear,
Osteen.
That doesn't mean that he's out of the woods in terms of high crimes and misdemeanors. Okay, high crimes and misdemeanors under an impeachment standard, that is not a legal concept.
Correct.
That's essentially it's like a quasi-political notion. So, for instance, if Trump had done that and the Congress of the United States decided you did it for reasons that were improper, let's say to obstruct an investigation,
sure.
The Congress can still invoke the political remedy under the Constitution, which is to call for his impeachment and mm-hmm. removal mm-hmm. based on a vote in the House and then ratification of that with 2/3 supermajority in the Senate. Okay.
Correct.
So a lot of people say, well, if you're claiming that Trump can just do whatever he wants, then it's a dictatorship. No, Trump can't do whatever he wants, and the founders expressly made impeachment a potential remedy mm-hmm. for presidential misconduct if it falls within the very nebulous term of high crimes and misdemeanors. But it is not a crime,
correct.
And it is not a basis to have a prosecutor appointed to investigate that conduct.
Sure. But none of this conduct, he could fire each one. It doesn't stop the investigation. Nixon showed us that. Just firing the prosecutor does not stop the investigation. So my question is, Mark Levin brings up the constitutionality of the appointment. So we both agree, I believe, that it's unconstitutional for him to have been appointed the way it was and now how it's expanded. What's the remedy? Because Rosenstein's not going to back down, you know. Jeff Sessions already recused
this
himself.
This is a genie out of the bottle problem.
Okay.
Meaning there are a number of remedies. Trump could direct Rosenstein to file Mueller. Okay? That's a remedy. But is that going to do anything?
Probably not.
It's not. And also, of course, and the reason I say it's a genie out of the bottle problem is because now there is a huge political component to this.
Okay.
Once you have a special counsel and he's running amok, searching for videotapes of Stormy Daniels and whatever else they're doing, sifting through garbage cans in the Ukraine or whatever. Now, if you try to remove him, that has all manner of political ramifications, including a potential impeachment charge by the Congress, because now you're getting rid of the special prosecutor because you have something to hide. That's why when you appoint these guys, it has to be under very, very discreet, particularized circumstances that, again, you're not just out there searching for crimes. That's what they do, ironically, in the Soviet Union. Mm. Show me the man, I'll find you the crime.
Exactly.
Okay? We specify what suspected criminal activity is to be investigated,
mm-hmm.
and we allow them to go no further to investigate that suspected crime. If other crimes or potential crimes are discovered in the course of that original limited investigation, the prosecutor can go back to a judge and say, in the course of our narrowly defined investigation, we have discovered other things that may also be crimes. We want the ability to expand the investigation. They would have to go back to Rosenstein and probably to a judge then, because the judge is the one that has to allow them to have subpoenas and all that sort of stuff. Because remember, at the end of the day, because this is not a criminal prosecution, this is never going to – like, I think there's millions of Americans who think that Robert Mueller is eventually going to be able to frog march Donald Trump out of the Oval Office in handcuffs.
I think there's plenty of people would like to see that.
And they don't seem to understand that he has absolutely no ability to do that.
So, ghost genie out of the bottle. Got it. Is there nothing that can be done to say, as a citizen of the United States, you're using my taxpayer dollars to run an investigation that is unconstitutional – and should it go to the Supreme Court, which probably eventually will, it will be all ruled null and void, and you wasted all that money that you got nothing. Let's say Donald Trump did everything you said. It's unconstitutional. So everything you did was unconstitutional.
Well, guess what? The other remedy is, what branch of government can step in and fix this?
Executive?
Well,
judicial?
Actually, Congress.
In what way?
Because I think what Congress has to do is to go back. Remember, Levin's premise under the Appointments Clause is this has to be a function of multiple branches of government, including Congress has to be able to ratify this, right? Senior officials.
Senate has to ratify it.
They cannot be put in position simply by executive fiat, right?
Right.
So the whole idea now is that Congress needs to go back to Rosenstein and say, this guy has been appointed in a way that is inconsistent with the Constitution and has completely cut Congress out of the equation. We demand that you go back and circumscribe his – we want to know what he is investigating right now.
Not fire him. give us a clear definition.
You need to have a clear definition.
But it still doesn't fix it because he's been appointed unconstitutionally.
That's true. It doesn't fix it, but at least it now limits what he's allowed to do and puts a stop to, we're going to keep investigating. Of course, remember, you know, it's not technically Mueller that's investigating Stormy. He's outsourced this to the Eastern District of New York. He's running the show.
With his AUSAs.
But we're going to say, we're not doing any more investigation of potential money laundering in Micronesia or any of these other people that were involved in things that have nothing to do with Russian collusion. And again, the other problem is Russian collusion isn't even a crime. It's a nothing. I don't even know what that means. We conduct counterintelligence investigations all the time, and we should. The point of a counterintelligence investigation is to find out what enemy actors, foreign governments are doing to undermine the national security of the United States. Am I arguing that the FBI should not undertake those investigations?
No.
Absolutely not. No. What I am saying is that what Mueller is doing is attempting to use a counterintelligence investigation as a criminal investigation, and it has no limits whatsoever, which not only violates the Constitution, as Levin points out, it violates the very regulation that allows his appointment.
I'll agree with everything you're saying, but I want my money back.
Yeah.
I'm being defrauded on a daily basis for an obviously unconstitutional investigation that's going to continue to waste my money, your money, and everybody else's money. There's got to be some remedy for that. I don't know what it is, but there has to be a remedy and say, stop. Until it's constitutional, you can't
do it. But remember, there is a remedy. Trump can stop him anytime he wants, but the problem is
Trump can't do it because of political ramifications for doing so. And I don't think Congress can
circumvent
at this point.
Ultimately, the Supreme Court can weigh in, and that's where we're potentially heading.
So we need Flynn to go to the Supreme Court and say, you couldn't charge me with something because the whole thing was unconstitutional to start with. Is that a legitimate argument for him?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, well, remember, Flynn's indictment is under serious question right now. Because what has come out, and we've talked about this on several different shows, is that the investigating FBI officers who interviewed Flynn, Peter Strzok was one of them. I forget who the other guy was.
Yeah, I don't know who the other was.
Concluded he didn't lie. There's now information that Comey was involved in basically changing what they call the 302 report, which is their summary of that interview, to reflect something different. That's really bad for Jimmy if that happened.
Yeah.
So, and then what wound up happening is that Sally Yates, good old Sally, right? Joan of Arc.
Never so famous.
Protesting against a valid executive order because she's an excellent virtue signaler.
Yeah.
Sally Yates was the one that then said, oh, no, I think that Flynn, remember, the incoming national security advisor, I think it's problematic that he's talking with Kislyak. So we may have a Logan Act problem here.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these people need to answer for this. So absolutely. I mean, if the whole focus, the whole origination of this investigation is unconstitutional, all these guys should be off the hook.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking, but I think it has to go to the Supreme Court before I don't know how it's going to happen.
I have no interest in defending Paul Manafort.
No.
The guy sounds like he's a slime bag. It also sounds like, based on what information we have, that long before he was involved with Trump, he was out there doing shady stuff in the Ukraine, but perhaps hiding tens of millions of dollars in overseas money, which is tax evasion. And guess what? Go sick 'em, federal prosecutor. The point is that Robert Mueller, and this is what Judge Ellis pointed out, if you read the transcript, what he basically said to the prosecutor is he said, listen, everyone here knows that you're not prosecuting Manafort because of this tax evasion and unregistered foreign agent nonsense. All you care about him for is because you want to try to use him to get to Trump.
Yep.
And I'm not buying that that's a legitimate use of your authority under the Enabling Act that allows you to conduct this investigation. So show me what allows you to prosecute Paul Manafort for tax crimes and unregistered agent crimes under the federal code that occurred 10 years or 8 years before he was even affiliated with Donald Trump's campaign? And their only answer was, number one, we don't have to tell you that. Number two, you just have to trust us that we have the authority and we don't have to show it to you because it's classified.
Yeah, good luck with that. I'm sorry. We will have to wait and see how that works out, but I do believe there has to be something. You can prosecute Manafort later or in some other capacity. I'm fine with that. Just make it constitutional from a Mueller perspective. Fire Mueller and hire somebody else with a very limited range. Let's move on. So we had another school shooting while we were gone. And this was a unique one. This was in Texas. and it was actually a hardened target. We've talked about that's a way to keep school shootings from happening. It was a student, hardened target that just went poorly, to say the least. What are your thoughts on that? We've advocated hardened targets. This was...
Well, I want to hear your thoughts first. Well, so what's your takeaway? And by the way, the basic facts here, and there's a lot of interesting things to talk about here, because the weapons of choice, sadly for the gun controllers, was, I believe, a 38 revolver.
Yes, and a six-shot revolver.
A six-shot revolver and a shotgun. Now, he also had apparently handmade or homemade bombs as well.
That did not go off. Right.
So he was... But the problem for the people that are now, you know, always want to argue that it's an assault weapon.
Right.
There were no assault weapons.
No.
These are two guns that even most of the most, you know, screeching gun controllers have not yet said those need to be banned. They're fixated on AR-15s and because they look scary. We've talked about this. So the weapons that he used, a six-shot revolver and a shotgun,
not high
that doesn't fit
either.
Into the whole we pass more laws and we can stop this. But I want your response on what does this mean? What does this mean that there? I think there were two armed. I'm not sure if they were private security. I can't remember.
I think they were police.
Okay.
I think they were local police.
And the one guy actually engaged the shooter.
Yes. Yes. And they did get him. They did catch him.
So what is your conclusion about the fact that he was still able to kill 10 people?
My conclusion is, and I'll also point out, there was no indication from anybody that I've seen reports of that this guy was going to do this. He did have a shirt he posted on Facebook, I believe, said "Born to Kill." That was the only thing that might have come
up. Oh, by
up.
The way, we should add this as a sort of, because I always like to set these up so we know all the facts. As I understand it, you correct me if I'm wrong about this, that he obtained the weapons. They were his father's weapons that he took from his dad, stole them. And I don't know all the ins and outs of how he got his hands on them, and we can talk about whether the dad should be responsible. But what I'm pointing out is this guy didn't go and purchase these weapons at a licensed or unlicensed firearms
dealer. Well, he was 17, so he couldn't legally have purchased them.
He couldn't have purchased them. He got them through his dad. So knowing all of that, what is your conclusion about the outcome here?
Well, my conclusion is I don't think there's anything you could have done to stop the kid from approaching the target. I think you probably had to have more training for the police involved. If you're going to harden the target, it actually has to be hardened. I think there maybe should have been some I hate this thing, but screenings going into the building. There should have been some way to screen the bags going in instead of just random people taking anything they want. And I think you need a lot more training to control yourself a hardened target. More people, more training than they had. One or two people in a school. I don't know how big this Santa Fe school is. It might be massive. It might be tiny. I think it's relatively large because outside Houston, is it not?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's probably relatively large. And I don't think two people in a building is nearly enough to call yourself a hardened target. So I don't think the hardened target theory is flawed. I think it wasn't implemented sufficiently enough to really make it a hardened target. Somebody said point to what Israel's done. They daily live with bombings and shootings and everything else with the Palestinian influx. They've said, you don't have any privacy. We're going to search everything that comes into the building, including schools. We're going to have people that are trained, really well-trained, not just somebody who's a cop who had a little bit of training, and we're going to make sure that you don't bring anything in. Now, we're going to fail sometimes because there is no point. You're never 100% successful, but we're going to do the best we can. That's what I think should have happened in Santa Fe. They tried to do it, but they didn't have enough of everything to make it successful, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I pretty much agree with everything that you said. I think the first point to be made, which we make every time there's one of these shootings, is all of these people, once again, that are ghoulishly standing up and saying, this is and now it's time to act. Now we must pass something. And, of course, you ask them, again, given these facts, he's 17 years old. He can't purchase these guns legally. He gets them from his dad. These are two weapons that no one that I'm aware of that's even a rabid gun controller has said is the problem because they're fixated on semi-automatic weapons. Neither of these was a semi-automatic weapon.
Nope.
And by the way, we've talked about this too. They don't even talk about semi-automatic pistols,
right.
Okay, which are the primary killing weapon in America.
Correct.
They don't even focus on that.
I don't even know what kind of shotgun it was. I don't know if it was a double barrel, under pump. I don't know.
An authority esteemed as Joe Biden himself has said, you know, shotguns, those are the good guns because they're historical and traditional or whatever. So what I would, again, ask all these people who are once again, you know, the Groundhog Day preening and moral sanctimony and demanding action is explain to me what law – You know, I forget who it was. It's one of the usual suspects standing up and saying, you know, Congress has blood on their hands for failing to act. And I would want one of our intrepid media people to say, what exactly are you proposing that Congress should have done that would do anything to prevent this? And the answer is nothing. No. Expanded background check does nothing. Magazine size does nothing. These guns don't have magazines.
Nope.
None of this. You know, barrel shrouds, bump stocks, close the gun show loophole, which doesn't even exist. That's a fiction. None of that will work. So that's the first point, which is all of these knee-jerk gun control solutions have absolutely nothing to do with solving this. And the second point, which I think you properly made, is we need to take seriously further hardening these all schools as targets. For whatever reason, and by the way, we made this point, is that if you actually look at this data over a 10 to 15, 20-year period, there really is not an epidemic of school shootings. And in fact, they were going on all the way back to the Clinton administration. However, they are – it's not even that they're statistically increasing, but I do think there is enough going on here where you can at least conclude there's some kind of perverse copycat.
Yeah.
I can't even – you know, there's a whole host of cultural issues here, social issues.
Well, just happened yesterday in Indiana.
So I think what we need to say is fine. Let's accept the fact that for whatever reason right now there are disaffected young men – who are deciding that this is a way for them to get fame or whatever else, and they are focusing on schools. We need to treat schools like we treat airports and like we treat federal courthouses and like we treat banks, whatever other areas that we have concluded are potentially going to be threatened by people wielding guns, criminals, psychopaths, and we need to do basically the same thing. Now, I know you said you don't agree with doing exactly what Israel does.
No, I didn't say I don't agree with it. I hate to go to that level, but I think we almost have to go to
that
level.
I don't hate to go to that level at all. I mean, the Israelis take this stuff seriously. They post highly trained. I mean, these are not – this is not some rent-a-cop. This is not Paul Blart,
school cop. They're a much smaller country with a lot less that they have to deal with. So keep that in mind. They're a very tiny country by comparison to us. So we have a lot more we'd have to harden.
Well, again, with the – you know what? With the – billions that we funnel into public education. And of course, they're always screeching for more.
Yes.
I think that we can allocate some of that to, and to your point, we have to do an analysis of, is this a 3,000 student school? Is this a 400 student school? What's the composition of the building? How many entrances are there?
That's the point right there. How many entrances?
You know, we need to, what the Israelis do is they basically create choke points where the only place you get into the building is here.
Yeah.
And here is where we have one or two or five guys with automatic weapons who are checking you. In fact, they post people not only inside the entrance, but outside, literally actively patrolling.
Yeah.
And if that's what we need to do right now to deter what appears to be some perverse trend, you know, an increasing trend to sort of copycat this kind of stuff, why wouldn't we do that?
We obviously should. I hate to go to that level, but I feel like it's inevitable. I hated to go to it with airports when after 9/11, but it was inevitable that think something like that was going to happen. The yesterday in Indiana made me think, because there was a middle schooler who shot a teacher and a student. Don't know any more details about that right now. I don't know where the gun came from. Obviously, the student didn't purchase the gun because they're a middle schooler and they couldn't legally purchase it. But it made me think about families. And bear with me for a second. I feel like we've glossed over as a country all the failings of families. We don't know what this kid's background was or any of these kids. But wouldn't it be wonderful if the families actually cared about their kids and were spending time with them, if they were disaffected? Maybe if Facebook, who's not supposed to be applied to anybody under the age of 13, but we all know people have Facebook accounts for their kids, maybe if people didn't cyberbully and have all these different things that make these kids feel disaffected and cast out in many cases, that somebody was actually with these kids. Now, that you're not going to get away from all of it, obviously, that happened before Facebook existed. But I think it's just been magnified with social media. Social media, I can call you bad things on Twitter. I can say bad things about Facebook, Snapchat, WhatsApp, whatever you want to use. Any of those things, I can anonymously make fun of you. And if you're a young, impressionable child, especially a male child, you're going to rage. You're going to go out and say, I'm going to show you. Let me see what I can do. I'm going to show you. You're making fun of me. All that comes out, and I put it back to the breakdown of the families. And I don't know about any of these kids, but it doesn't feel like a family unit that's intact and living together, hopefully Christian, living together is really going to have these problems. But apparently we can gloss over, we can have all these other issues in society, and it's the guns, the physical guns, that are causing the problem when it's actually all of us allowing it to happen. That's the sad part. That's what I saw yesterday from Indiana. But it applies to all of this to me. It's all sad. Just sad for everybody involved.
But the solution that we've talked about is the one solution. In my mind, it's the only rational solution. Mm-hmm. It's the only one. Oh, and of course, you mentioned you get the pushback. Well, see, your good guy, your trained good guy with a gun didn't work. Well, guess what? No one ever claimed that it's a 100% guarantee.
Correct.
This is life. It gives you a fighting chance. And by the way, if we're going to play that hypothetical out, we also don't know whether this kid could have killed 50 people.
Right.
Okay. The guy at least shot at him, diverted him for some period of time. That guy isn't there. How do we know? I mean, if we're going to play this hypothetical game, then maybe he goes on a rampage and kills 24 more people.
Sure.
If there's literally no one there. No one who is saying, as I am saying, that we need to harden targets, we need to have trained personnel with weapons, just like we do at any – just like the Hollywood celebrities that hate guns but are surrounded by their
men with
crack team of private security, and I don't think they're armed with, you know,
no.
batons.
No.
They've got guns – is – it gives you a better chance
sure.
than not having guns. Again, it is so irrational to me that anyone can take the position and again, oh, well, kids could be killed in the crossfire. You're correct.
Yes.
You are correct. That is a possibility in that type of mayhem. There's always going to be that chance. But you know what? I'd rather have a guy there trying to kill the killer than having kids doing their cower behind the desk drill or throw rocks at the guy. We talked about
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a single person who's a gun controller who you could hook up to a polygraph and say, we've talked about this.
Yes.
Here's the scenario. Man with a weapon. I don't care what it is. Revolver, shotgun,
knife.
AR-15, scariest looking gun you can find, is kicking in your door to your household with your wife and your children. You have two choices. At that point in time, would you prefer to be armed with harsh language or a gun? A is harsh language. B is a gun. If you say A, you're lying. You're either lying or you are so willfully delusional
yes.
that I feel badly for you.
Stop, or I would say stop again. That's all that's going to happen. I asked my wife that question, and she goes, well, guns are scary. I don't know if I want a gun around. I'm like, but if somebody's trying to shoot at you in your home, would you rather have the gun or not? Well... and she had to think about it. I said, no, the answer's gun. The answer's always gun.
And by the way, is the answer that you're guaranteed to kill the intruder and save the day? No. He might still wind up
yes.
harming everyone and killing everyone in your family.
Yes.
That's a possibility, because who knows how that's going to turn out. But you know what? If we're gonna play the odds, the chances of you and your entire family being murdered by a guy who's armed when you don't have a weapon, I would think are a lot higher.
They should be. They should. And point out again, the Israelis don't stop every bomb on every
bus.
They don't stop every terrorist attack. But we don't hear about the ones they do stop, or the ones that are limited or reduced in violence because there was somebody there trained. Tony makes a great point. You're never going to get rid of everything. If somebody really wants to harm you, they're going to find a way. But if you have – if every wing of a school has an armed guard pacing back and forth – and you're planning this attack, are you going to think twice, well, maybe I shouldn't do this because I'm probably going to get killed doing it, unless they don't care to die in the process. But they're not going to be saying, ah, I'm just going to do this. I can do this. They're not building up in their mind it's an easy thing to do. If they see constantly guards all around, they're going, this is a little harder for a one-man show.
And I think the other point that needs to be made, we've talked about this notion of copycat trend, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Well, guess what? If there turns out to start being a trend where the news says attempted mass murderer shot dead in school parking lot, another one shot dead in entryway, another one shot dead, that's also going to cause some reflection, I think, among the people that are doing this stuff to say, gee, this doesn't seem to be working out the way it was in Columbine or whatever no. else. This may not be the blaze of glory that I want to go out with anymore, because it's seemingly not as effective.
Right. And I think you're right. It's got to be – you got to copycat failure. You got to make sure failure is pronounced. And I think maybe some of the overwrought reporting of the actual events needs to diminish as well. It's a local event. Maybe it's a national event. But you're giving – voice to people who want to copy.
But have you noticed, speaking of that, and we'll move on, have you noticed the level of media intensity on this particular shooting, would you say, just in, you know, just kind of the eyeball test, have they really been reporting this one?
No.
And why do you think that is?
Because the weapons used.
Correct.
They aren't AR-15s.
If we don't have something that's useful to fit into our narrative template, which is it's the scary gun that is bad, and see, we told you, they have no use, Steve, because the problem for them is they're in a corner if they talk about gun control as it relates to shotguns and pistols, because these are the weapons that they pretend they don't want to ban.
Right.
Right? So if they're forced to talk about, well, what do you do with a crazy person who has the two weapons that you still think are fine, they don't want to talk, they want to have that conversation. They want to have a conversation about a very specific fact pattern. And again, they don't even want to have a conversation about that, because the first time you ask anyone, fine, you're demanding action.
Mm-hmm.
What is your solution? No, I don't want to hear, think about the children, you don't care, the NRA is funding this podcast. No, what I want to hear from you is your solution based on these facts. Explain how expanded background checks does anything about this shooting. Go. Crickets. You want children to die. Okay, explain how limiting magazine size has anything to do with this. Go. You want children to die. Yeah, I get it. So that's the response. They cannot articulate in any rational way how all of their clamoring for gun control is going to stop any of this.
No.
They just can't.
So I want to point this out to people who don't understand guns, and I don't think there's anybody on this podcast listening maybe, but there might be somebody. So if I'm 10 feet away from you and you're pointing a 38 pistol at me, or you're pointing a 12-gauge shotgun at me, I prefer you point the 38 pistol at
Correct.
Me. I might survive the 38 pistol. 10 feet away with a 12-gauge, you're going to make me hamburger. I'm dead.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from that. Now, also, remember, adrenaline's pumping. But the people getting shot at and the people doing the shooting, reloading a 38 revolver, I'd be interested to see how many times that was reloaded, if ever. Six shots thrown away.
Yeah, I doubt he has a speed loader.
No, I doubt that. And even if he did, it's still going to be you're jittery with that. And I think even reloading the shotgun, I got to assume it was a pump shotgun, because there's no way you're getting more than two shots off with that. But who knows?
But that's another point, is the fixation on AR-15s and these expanded magazines, high capacity magazines. Speaking of reloading, mm-hmm. what these people don't seem to grasp is if you have a 9mm Glock,
slide that clip back in.
2 seconds.
Exactly.
You got a satchel with 15 clips. There is no difference in terms of killing capacity whether you have a 30-round magazine in an AR-15 or a 15.
But it'll cost more. So they got to get multiple clips.
But that's the point. Is that that's why the guy at Virginia Tech up until Vegas, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, Vegas isn't a school shooting.
No.
Killed the most people, and he had two semi-auto pistols.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk about those weapons.
Can't.
Why?
Well, because it doesn't fit their narrative.
Because those are the ones that are used in Chicago and D.C. and all of our urban shooting galleries by people that they would prefer not to talk about, because they want to fixate on disaffected white males who carry scary guns into schools, and they don't want to talk about anything else.
That's sad. Let us move on. So this week we had heard the sad news that was clamored from the high hills. The North Korean summit was not going to happen. Now, the
first,
same
it was,
people.
It was bad that it was going to happen.
Same people in March who were up in arms because how dare you have this? Aren't you? You're stupid if you're having this. We're saying the same things. I can't believe we're not having this. What's going on? You built up expectations and it didn't happen. It didn't happen. So I want to play a clip from our favorite people at The View.
Oh, yes. This should be excellent.
This is Whoopi.
Incisive geopolitical commentary from Whoopi.
Here you go. Maybe.
Or maybe not. Actually, it's probably better.
Possibly not. Okay, the computer stalled on me. Okay. Anyway.
Well, what did Whoopi say? What did Whoopi say?
Here we go.
So, the guy in the White House announced this morning
the president.
That his meeting with Kim Jong-un is canceled. Now, in a letter responding to North Korea's threats to pull out, where they called VP Mike Pence ignorant and stupid, he wrote, based on the tremendous anger and open hostility displayed in your most recent statement, I feel it's inappropriate at this time to have this long planned meeting, adding, you talk about your nuclear capabilities, but ours are so massive and powerful that I pray to God will never have to be used. He actually said all that.
Well,
is it a surprise?
There goes that Nobel Peace Prize he was.
There you go.
There it goes.
Okay, so that was Whoopi and then Joy Behar. Yes. She was reading the letter that Trump sent, and our nuclear capabilities are massive in comparison to North Korea.
So well, you're not allowed to say that.
But what was the, he said that. Well, yes, because it's true. And anybody who even knows anything, even Kim Jong-un knows his capabilities are minuscule in comparison. Maybe they won't be forever, but they are currently. Are you, I'll go first. Let me go first. I'm not upset he pulled out. Because I think everything Kim Jong-un did is right down the script where I say I'm going to back away. I'll show you video of tunnels collapsing, not necessarily the nuclear tunnels, but a tunnel. So obviously it's the same thing. I'm not going to let you come in and look at my stuff because that would prove that I'm lying to you. So why have a summit? You're not coming in good faith. You have no intention of dealing in good faith. Why have the summit? I'm not giving you the propaganda moment. I'm going to let you say, hey, we're not having it because you can't be honest. Boom. In your ball in your court.
Correct.
Now, I heard somebody say this week, Kim Jong-un got the upper hand here. I think it was Hillary. Kim Jong-un got the upper hand. I'm like,
of course it would be Hillary saying that.
How did he get the upper hand? What did he get? We didn't have the summit and that plays into his hands positively? What?
If this had been the Obama administration, it would have been an immediate attempt. No, please. No, please don't. Don't. We still want to have the summit. We'll do anything. We'll send you some pallets of cash. What do you want?
Talk to Iran. We've done
it. What do you want? Because we're going to just put the kick me sign on us.
Yeah.
Trump, again, in sort of his lizard brain, is a guy. Okay, he's a guy from New York who's a real estate developer who is engaged in, let's just say, he pushes the envelope in terms of, I mean, sure. his history, okay? Sure. He understands at a minimum, again, at sort of an instinctive level, negotiations. And what do you do? This was, who's going to blink? Yeah. Who's going to blink? North Korea is having a tantrum, right? Demonstrating, as we all know, they're going to act in bad faith. And Trump says, fine.
Go ahead.
We're not showing up. And I think within 24 hours, there was then a report that North Korea said, oh, no. We're willing to meet at any point in time. See, the nuanced diplomats in the Obama administration never seemed to grasp this idea that you walk away to get a better deal.
Mm-hmm.
Their whole idea was, oh my word, the minute someone threatens to walk away, when even we have leverage, we got to give them more stuff.
Keep them at the table.
Right? I mean, you'd want to play poker all day long against Barack Obama and John Kerry because it wouldn't be all day long. They'd be cleaned out of chips in about 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? They don't understand this. And to your other point is, it doesn't matter what he does. Everything he does is wrong.
Yes.
You shouldn't be negotiating with them. It's the worst thing in the world. Now you're not negotiating. That's the worst thing in the world. It just doesn't matter.
It just makes me laugh because you're right. You don't – you got to draw the line somewhere. And negotiation requires – he said it, the art of the deal. When do you walk away? We'll go back to Kenny Rogers. Know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You don't just keep going blindly forward and hope it works out for the best because you know North Korea wants to get a diplomatic solution that they can tout to the world. Hey, we're great. Don't give us more stuff because we don't have anything.
Yeah.
Send us aid.
I mean, this has actually shifted three times. The narrative began, right, what was this, 6 months ago? Trump's going to blow up the earth like Marvin the Martian with his lunatic rhetoric and his mean tweets. Okay, that's bad. Then we are going to have a summit. Mm-hmm. That's also bad because it's idiotic to meet with the people that we just said you were going to blow up. That seems inconsistent with wanting to blow up the world. And now that he's backed off of that and said it's off, now that's bad too. I mean, why should anyone take anything these people say seriously?
I did hear somebody on CNN, I can't remember who it was now, say that it's probably a good thing this didn't happen because you've got two crazy people in the same room with nuclear capabilities and they could have blown up the world. Because
right.
They're in the same
room. And I also love that. The conflation of Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un as equally crazy. And in fact,
yes.
I've read many articles saying equally despicable. And again, this demonstrates the level of insanity that has somehow, you know, just overtaken half of the country. I mean, you can say, I can't stand Donald Trump.
Correct.
And it makes me gnash my teeth when I see a picture of him. And I find him to be crude and belligerent and a know-nothing. And he sends mean tweets all the time. And he's reckless. That's fine. The other guy is a genocidal maniac.
Yes.
Okay?
He fed his half-brother to dogs and watched them eat him alive.
And so if you're going to literally compare...
It's not the same.
I mean, I guess it's the same. If you're going to compare Trump with Hitler, you might as well compare him with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
They're not the same.
But that person, and by the way, that person... is the New York Times editorial board and the Washington Post editorial board. You just simply – you might as well treat that person as someone who's just escaped the lockdown wing from the mental hospital.
True.
Because if those are the comparisons that you're going to make and claim that these are equivalent things, again, you're spouting the level of nonsense that suggests that you should have some sort of examination by a mental health professional.
That is true. That is it boggles the mind that this is something – to get up in arms up. Either way, I think this is part of the deal. Whatever the deal is, there may be no deal.
And there probably will be no deal because there hasn't been a deal for the last 3 decades because these guys have nukes. This is the reason we don't want people to get nukes because that changes entirely the strategic evaluation of what's going on. So nobody's sitting here saying Donald Trump is going to achieve a miraculous diplomatic victory because they're going to lie and they're going to cheat and they're not going to agree to anything. But this constant, the end of the way.
Well, here, Joy Behar, there goes that Nobel Peace Prize. Again, he hadn't won a Nobel Peace Prize. And remember, Obama won it for what? What did he win it for? Because I still don't know.
He won it for continuing the invasion of two countries and drone striking. He won it because he was Barack Obama.
Yeah, that's the part.
The light worker.
Go back to what he won it for. Nobody can tell you what that is. Nobody.
Well,
I mean, it's out there, but nobody.
Barack Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize for the same reason that Yasser Arafat won the Nobel Peace Prize. So they're
lying.
It's in good company.
That's lying. So it boggles my mind that this is even – Joy Behar, she's a comedian. You are a comedian. We talked about you when you were talking about Christians and Mike Pence. You don't have a leg to stand on. Stop talking about politics. You do not know what you're saying. You are a comedian, period.
Well, you know what? I don't even have that. She can say whatever she wants. Her view is exactly the same as the allegedly deep thinkers in the Democratic Party. So when you say she's a comedian, it's not as if her view is any different from what you hear from Paul Krugman or Nancy Pelosi or any of the other so-called intelligentsia, on the left. She's a perfect representation of that mindset. They're all the same. They say the same thing.
They are. I want to read you what Barack Obama won the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize for.
Okay.
I bet you can't even tell you, but you're probably close. He won it for, extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. He cited promotion of nuclear nonproliferation and a new climate in international relations fostered by Obama, especially in reaching out to the Muslim world. What?
But isn't it interesting is that all that is so aspirational. He didn't actually – it's perfect. He didn't actually do anything. He made efforts to change the climate, to say – in fact – we made NASA into a Muslim outreach organization because that's what NASA's supposed to do.
Sure. He took office in January of 2009 and was awarded the prize on December 10th of 2009. Not even a year in office and he gets a Nobel Peace Prize? Are you serious?
Don't under it. Well, but have you looked at the people that award the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yes. It's
of course.
Beyond reproach. I can't even imagine. All right. Speaking of BO and MO, they got a new gig coming up, and I want to play Ben Shapiro's take on the new gig for the Obama clan.
Obama is in advanced negotiations, according to Kyle Griffin, with Netflix to produce a series of high-profile shows that will provide him a global platform after his departure from the White House. People familiar with the discussions tell the New York Times. So apparently Eric Schultz, a senior advisor to the former president, issued a statement. President and Mrs. Obama have always believed in the power of storytelling to inspire. Throughout their lives, they have lifted up stories of people whose efforts to make a difference are quietly changing the world for the better. As they consider their future personal plans, they continue to explore new ways to help others tell and share their stories. So much for non-reality TV show Obama. He is now going to be invading your Netflix with his latest series. Yes, he was the Hollywood president. I said this at the time. When Trump was elected, the great irony of the situation is that Obama thought that he was this great statesman who is not a reality TV game show host. And then he had to look across the room at a guy who is his direct polar mirror. He's like Bizarro Superman, like Bizarro Obama in the form of Trump. both reality TV show presidents, one who considers himself a great thinker and one who considers himself an entertainer.
That's, I mean, it's.
Well, the best part of the whole thing is about Obama's quote about, you know, we've always believed in storytelling. Absolutely. Your entire presidency was about spinning fantastical fables about, you know, health care that will allow everyone to save $2,500 and fables about, you know, Russian collusion and all of this. Absolutely. Ben Rhodes, one of his chief advisors, is a failed novelist. And we have talked about this, but it is so perfect. That is what Ben Rhodes admitted to the New Yorker about the Iran deal, is that we fed all of you people, talking to the guy interviewing him. You're one of the idiots that we fed this to, and it was an echo chamber, and you guys repeated the story that we gave you because it was such a great screenplay that we came up with, and you guys every time,
you
buy
it up
in.
Every single time. So it said he's.
I mean, does
this
surprise you, Chad?
Not in the slightest. But somebody asked me the other day. They said, "Well, what's?" And Ben Shapiro said that before it actually went through. He's actually signed the contract. It's multiple shows, some of which are reality TV, which I think is all of them, and some is scripted. Some he and Michelle will appear in. Some they won't. We don't really know what it's going to be exactly, but it's going to be propaganda that you're not going to watch because it's going to be lousy. I'm predicting right now, whatever he puts out, it will sound good.
Well,
the critics will love it, and it will be lousy.
Well, not only the critics will love it because they, you know, they're the fawning supplicants for Obama, but it's also going to tank.
Oh yeah, it's going to be horrible
because again,
he spent a lot of money on crap.
Flyover America is not going to watch some special.
Well, they'll watch the first one to see.
Oh,
ooh,
sure,
this is the president.
Yeah,
the president.
It's okay. This is really boring.
This
and
is
it's
dumb.
The same. It's the same pabulum that they can continue to spout about whatever, and it, of course it'll all be. I'm sure that it's going to be focused on, you know, the chin stroking. You know, we are at a terrible, terrible moment in our democracy with Hitler having ascended to the chancellorship. And this is why that I used my pen and phone to promote, to first of all, to save the world from environmental disaster. And then, of course, to stem the rising of the seas and all the other things and to explain why the Muslim world invented supercomputers and whatever else that we did. And so part of this, look. Obama is watching from the sideline, and all of his...
He wants to win an Oscar.
Well, no, but all of his... Oh, I guarantee you...
He's
going to
get nominated,
it
right?
It will win.
Yeah.
Absolutely, he's going to win. But here's the thing.
Or an Emmy.
I'm sure that he is... it's like acid in his throat watching all of his tissue paper edicts getting just...
Flushed.
Flushed is exactly
right. Did you see what he said?
Over and over.
He said a couple days ago... It was great being in an administration that not tainted by scandal. And I had to laugh as soon as I'm reading it because I'm like, are you looking at your own administration? You're talking about some other administration because
right.
It wasn't yours.
Right. Apparently he was serving in a secret administration
we don't know about.
In another galaxy that was pristine
and
untainted.
This one, we had Fast and Furious.
We had IRS targeting.
We also
had Benghazi. I mean, that
Hillary's server. The FISA court warrants against your opponent.
Yeah.
Hello.
I was going to say, you better hold the thought on that scandal thing, buddy.
Wow.
Because right now with what's going on the, you know, again, the deep state. And by the way, I think we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
I don't care what you want to call it, but there's a group of guys at the top of our intelligence agencies and our criminal justice agencies that were clearly colluding to destroy an opposing political campaign. So
it can't be good.
You better hold the phone on the no scandal, Barack.
Yeah.
Either that or you're
nothing came of it so far, but it should have. All the things we're talking about were brushed aside. Everything so far has been brushed aside. Nothing. So technically he's right. Nothing stuck. Lots of accusations, nothing stuck.
By the way,
that
raises an interesting question. Setting aside the Russian collusion fairy tale, because you hear this all the time, the scandals of the Trump administration. Can you think this is an honest question. What is a scandal that the Trump administration – and I mean, I guess you're going to have to say, well, look at that tweet. But other than
that's
some –
that's a scandal.
That's my point. tell me –
Well, they're going to say...
What is a scandal?
They're going to say the revolving door was staffed.
That's a scandal?
Apparently,
no,
that's going to be a scandal.
No, okay, so that's ridiculous.
Russian collusion.
Okay, again, we said that. That's
Cambridge Analytica, which wasn't anything other than anybody else could do. You could have gotten all that data that Cambridge Analytica got. just understand that I could have gotten it. Tony, well, Tony couldn't have gotten it because he'd have to be on Facebook and know how to do that. But you could have gotten that data. So there's nothing illegal about what they did. Unethical, yes. Illegal, no. Nothing. There's no scandal.
That's the point, is that when you listen to someone who is a progressive or a never Trumper talk about this administration, it gets back to those, like, are we inhabiting the same plane of existence?
I don't know.
Because what you are talking about in these Armageddonish terms about, you know, tyrants and about scandal and about the end of the world and get to the bunkers, I don't actually, in my universe, that's not going on. So I'm confused.
You should be.
I'm confused by this rhetoric. I see a guy who says a lot of incendiary things, and you're right. His management style seems to be very less than cohesive, a little bit bull in the china shop. And you're right. We've gone through a bunch of different personnel. But this is – you're comparing this to, you know, 1930s Germany? That's what you're invoking?
Not even close.
What?
Not even close. There's
– but that's why people don't –
at the end of the day, and I say you shouldn't look back on any presidency at least for 15 to 20 years to see if it was successful or not. You can look back and say 15 to 20 years now – Trump's presidency, whether it was 4 years, 8 years, 3 years, whatever happens, maybe it wasn't successful. Maybe it wasn't a great presidency. But scandal, so far, based on what we know, there's no scandal. Obama's administration, scandal.
Yeah,
George W. Bush, maybe with the Scooter Libby thing.
Well,
maybe.
People are going to argue, you know, that he and Cheney, you know, flew in with their hang gliders and blew up the Twin Towers or
Clinton,
whatever.
Yeah, scandal. Scandal, 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 scandal.
This is, again, as we say all the time, the reason that Trump is likely to be reelected is because of this insanity.
Mm-hmm.
If you would just stop with the Pavlovian over the top, democracy is being destroyed. I need to find a safe house in Switzerland, right? And again, they're saying this from like their pedicure in Beverly Hills.
Yes.
The world is over, right? So if you would just stop that and actually make substantive arguments, there are a lot of things that a reasonable person can look at Donald Trump and say, this is bad. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't like his character. I don't like this decision. I don't like some of his economic There is a reasoned and reasonable way to make those arguments. But when you are screaming at the top of your lungs that the four horsemen are approaching every time the guy has two scoops of ice cream – you might as well be, like I said, you might as well be wearing like the, you know, the paper Burger King crown, running
it.
Around the parking lot in your bathrobe, declaring that you're the king of the Crab Nebula. Nobody is going to listen to you.
Isn't that what CNN does
already?
That's
what CNN, that is their entire network. That is what they do.
All right, we're going to close out Sports Alert, Sports Alert, Sports Alert.
Wait, no, before the Sports Alert, okay, I have ahead. A 1 minute, I didn't even talk to Chad about this.
I have no idea what
this is one
saying.
Of these things, I noticed, it just bugged me. Have you seen the Nissan? There's a Nissan commercial, which there's a tie-in to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows, like, it's a scene where I haven't seen – it's the new Solo movie. I haven't seen the movie.
I haven't either.
Where the little droid is piloting the ship between two of these Imperial cruisers. It's a very narrow gap, and it's sort of like, look out! So they play this clip, and then they show this woman – in her Nissan SUV with her family, and they're trundling down the highway, and it's a three-lane highway, and they are approaching, dun, 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 two tractor trailers that are on the far left and the far right lane with the middle lane. Now, Nissan, this is apparently a crisis. How could we possibly navigate between two cars that are lawfully two trucks? And so Nissan apparently has a technology. I don't know what it is, because they show it like this little like tractor beam that allows the driver approaching this scary crisis situation of two trucks traveling lawfully in their lanes of travel to pilot through. And the husband says something like, you know, do you see it, honey? We're approaching danger. Don't worry. I have the space. And my reaction to that commercial is if you can't drive your car safely between two trucks in a single lane.
Were they going fast or slow?
They're just driving in front of her. Apparently, it's very, very scary to drive between large large truck-like vehicles, then guess what? I think you should probably be taking Uber everywhere.
The assault rifle the road.
Huh? I mean, we need a technology to help the person stay in their lane so that they don't wildly careen to the left or the right.
You know what that technology is? No texting, no talking while driving, just drive.
No,
that's
just
the technology.
That just amazed me. Look, wow. We can shepherd you safely down the road. Yeah, you know what? Pull over. Call someone else to drive.
Let your husband get in the seat.
Yeah, because you're a menace.
Wow.
If you believe that approaching two trucks, they're lawfully in their lanes, and you can't make it without the Nissan, I don't know.
Tractor beam. We'll call it the tractor beam. Whatever it's called, we'll call it the tractor beam.
It just sort of struck me that we're to the point now where people apparently need this.
That's sad. It's sad, but obviously more technology separates them from everybody else who doesn't have that whatever.
Right. So I actually think what we should do is every person that buys that car with that option in it is automatically, presumptively, to be removed from driving.
Your license
like,
we're
going to keep a database of the Nissan, whatever, you know, the Jedi function that allows you to actually stay in your lane. How could we possibly achieve this without the special computer?
Wow.
And then you will be allowed to, you know, ride a moped to work or something.
No. You can stay in your lane for that, too.
But
so.
It doesn't matter, because if you get hit, you're not going to hurt anybody else. You'll be
that's
a,
true.
You'll be
a hood ornament.
No longer diluting the gene pool.
Okay, so now a sports alert.
Yes.
We've got two deciding games in the NBA, East and West Finals tonight.
Yeah.
Or the next two nights, I guess. Who do you predict is going to come out of the East? Who's going to come out of the West? Who are we going to see in the Finals? Between those two teams.
Well, the thing that really stinks, that stinks in the West, because Chris Paul not gotten injured, I think I would have said the Rockets.
I would too. But it's game six, so it could be.
Well, from what I've read today, I don't think he's going to be back.
Okay.
And if he is back, I think he's going to be incredibly limited and probably more of a handicap than a help.
Okay.
So that really stinks because...
you don't think Houston has any shot without Chris
Paul? No, I do not think they have any shot without Chris Paul. I mean, he is their most important player and has become evident in this series.
More than Harden.
Even more so than James Harden, because Chris Paul is kind of the glue. He's sort of the... He's the warrior on that team. I mean, he's the reason that they won both Game 4 and Game 5.
Yeah.
Harden has been... I mean, look, Harden's a great player. He's probably going to be the regular season MVP. He has been having a horrendous... I think he has missed his last 20 three-point shots. Something like that. He was 0
maybe
for 11.
Maybe he shouldn't take three-point shots.
He was
0
for 11 in Game 5, and I think he was 0 for 9.
Yeah, maybe he shouldn't take the three-point shots.
Well,
just
no, he's actually a pretty good three-point shooter. He shot the most. Not recently. So that really bums me out, because if you remember, the narrative for that series going in up until Game 4, because if you remember, it was three consecutive blowouts.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors killed the Rockets in Houston Game 1.
Mm-hmm.
Game 2, the Rockets came back, crushed the Warriors. And then in Game 3, the first game in Oracle, they got blown. The Rockets got blown off the court like they were some JV high school team. And the narrative even before that had been, nobody can touch these Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought that was true. I thought the Rockets were going to lose probably in five games. The last two games, I have never seen, particularly in the fourth quarters, which is really the two key, I have never seen the Warriors' offense, this so-called iconic, unstoppable offense. And look, they've got incredible talent. They got Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant. I mean, nobody can run out three guys like that. But they have bogged down. They were 3-for-18 from the field in the fourth quarter at Oracle in Game 4, which, by the way, that was the game that would have decided the series.
Right.
If the Warriors win that, it's over in 5.
Right.
They scored 12 points in the fourth quarter. And again, this has historically been a Houston Rockets team that is at best mediocre on defense. Now, I got to give them credit. Have you watched the games?
I watched some of them. I haven't seen
they have anything. Been playing, I mean, in your face, up into them, physical defense. I give them credit. But they have not been a great defensive team. And yet, I think what has happened is that the Rockets have so uglied up the game, this ISO basketball. I mean, it amazed me, because I probably watched the Rockets play literally 2 or 3 times this season during the regular season. I know how they play. But their possessions for the entirety of Game 4 basically devolved into, they get across half court, they maybe make one pass. If someone doesn't jack a jumper, literally Chris Paul backs up towards the half court line in the corner with about 8 seconds on the shot clock, and he actually literally like bounces the ball in front of him to get a running start, and then charges at his defender and either breaks him down, gets a layup or a jumper, or he passes it. And the same thing with James Harden. No attempt to pass. right? There's no assist. It's just two guys who are tremendous one-on-one players going at their defender and trying to create something. I mean, it's terrible basketball to watch. It's sort of oddly compelling. And I think what's happened is the Warriors have sort of started playing exactly the same way. It's we're going to ISO Kevin Durant, you know, sort of in the post or slightly off the post, and he's going to dribble and then try to jack up a shot with a few seconds. They've stopped passing. They've stopped moving. That's not how the Warriors win.
So who comes out of the West?
The Warriors come out of the West.
East?
That is a hard one.
Oh, it's an easy one.
I think
Kevin Love's out.
You know, it doesn't matter.
Well, LeBron can't do everything. He needs somebody else on the court. He's phenomenal. But he needs somebody else in the court.
I think I have to say this. I have to say the Celtics only because Cleveland has not come within 10 points of them in Boston.
Yeah.
And I do think, look, I think LeBron, you know, when you got a guy like LeBron, you know, LeBron is fully capable of showing up in game seven and putting 50 up. But I think you're right is that I don't think he's going to be able to drag them across the finish line. If the question for the Celtics is, this is a very young team other than Al Horford.
It is.
Okay. Jason Tatum, all the other guys that have been playing phenomenal basketball. How are these guys going to play in a game seven in the Eastern Conference Finals? Now, up to now, they've seemingly been unfazed by any level of pressure as they've gone through the playoffs. But this is a new deal. This is a game seven at home to get to the NBA Finals. Do you take that team with their youth and inexperience over LeBron? I think it's going to be a nail biter. I think it's going to be the first game in Boston that's going to be very close.
Sure.
I think the Celtics squeak it out.
I think LeBron will will them to make it close. I don't think he'll have enough because I think he's tired. Because he's been doing a lot for this team. I think he's really tired.
Well,
and I think he's not going to be
able to pull
across
the finish line.
The one
thing I will say, though, is do not, just like you would say.
Don't count him out. I understand.
No. What I would say, though, is the way the game plays out, if they let the Cavs hang around and they go to the fourth quarter and this is a couple possession game, who are you going to bet on?
LeBron.
I'm betting on LeBron.
Sure.
He's the best player in basketball. And just like Jordan, he's not the same as Jordan, but he has demonstrated in this series, they have no answer for him when he decides, I'm going to score. So if you go into the fourth quarter, Boston, and the Cavs are within, you know, 4 or 5 points, that is not a place you want to be.
No.
They want to try to blow this game open early, make LeBron see this ain't happening for us.
Make use all his energy to try to get him back.
You don't want to be facing that guy in a fourth quarter in a deciding game with it close because he'll steal it.
I think whoever wins the West wins the championship.
Well, now here's the other thing though. LeBron is now because listen, he knows his legacy, right? He's chasing Jordan. He is very self-aware in terms of his place in history.
Sure.
And what LeBron has got to be looking at right now is okay. Wait a minute. If we can manage to win Game 7, because you and I both talked about the fact that I think the Cavs get swept by the Warriors.
I think get one.
I don't think they get any.
Okay.
I think LeBron's too tired. I don't think they can defensively deal with the Warriors at all. But here's the thing. LeBron's now looking at the West and saying, Chris Paul is out and may be out for an extended period of time.
Could be.
If the Rockets manage to find a way to win that series, and now we can roll into the finals against a Rockets team without Chris Paul, the Cavs can absolutely win that series.
Possible.
So you got to think, you know, because I do think in the back of his mind, particularly after game five, he's saying to himself, good grief, even if I manage to don the Superman cape and get us over the finish line, we're not playing the Warriors Warriors in a seven. They're just not.
No.
And you may ask, well, wait a minute. If the Rockets can beat them, the Rockets are
a different team.
The Rockets match up better with the Warriors because between Harden, the Cavaliers, other than LeBron, do not have a James Harden, a Chris Paul, and the most underestimated guy on that team who is a great scorer is Eric Gordon. The Rockets have three guys who can break you down, isolate you, and score. That's why they give the Warriors trouble because of the way they play. The Cavs can't play that way.
Don't have the talent.
But I'm sure LeBron is now saying he's rooting for Houston hard.
Well, I'm sure he is because he has a better shot against Houston.
He has a better shot, and
yes,
if they're in there without Chris Paul,
sure,
I think that becomes a 6 or 7 game series.
I don't know if it's a good series, but I think it's a winnable series for the Cavs. I agree with that. But I still think the West, regardless of who wins the West, is probably going to win the championship, in my opinion. I'm just one man
My
who
opinion
know
is
anything.
If Chris Paul, if the Rockets get past the Warriors, which I don't expect them to now.
Right.
But if they do, if Chris Paul still is unable to play, I think the Cavs win that series.
It's certainly possible. And last thing, Vegas Golden Knights, Washington Capitals. Who wins it?
Capitals.
Why?
Because they just broke the curse. They're in the finals. The curse was they can never win the Eastern Conference Finals.
Nobody
in D.C. expected them to win that Game 7.
I think the story is Vegas until the Capitals do something.
I mean, they're the Cinderella story, but I think it comes to an end. I think Ovechkin gets his first cup.
I think better goaltending in Vegas. They got better goaltenders. They got more scoring. Better goaltenders. I'm picking Vegas.
Hockey, goaltending is paramount.
Oh, it is.
Although, who's the Caps goalie? Holtby?
Yeah, something like that.
But he stiffed, he stuffed them in 4-0, right?
Final. Yeah.
I think the Caps are better. And again, I just think that they broke the curse. They were supposed to lose Game 7 in that series. They weren't supposed to win, because that's what
they're supposed to lose the
Penguins.
That's
what they always do.
They're supposed to lose the Penguins and beat the Penguins.
So the fact that they went on the road and they won 4-0 in a deciding Game 7, and it was the fatalism in D.C. Like, here we go again.
We're going to lose.
I mean, first of all, they were up 2-0 in the series.
I know.
Okay, on the road.
I know.
They won the first two road games, and then they fall behind 3-2. Everyone was like, it's over. The fact that they came back and won that series, they've got that curse off their shoulders. I think they win it in 6.
Okay. I think it goes 7. I think Vegas wins it. There you go.
We shall see.
We shall see. That's all I got tonight, Tony. You done?
I am fini.
He's cooked. So we will see you next time. I'm Chad.
I'm Tony.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Hannah Tree production.